Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
The Fed has officially turned off all safety protocols. We have an imposter alert. Rapid testing now approved is good for the reopening trade, and we have listeners' questions that are answered. All this and much more on episode number 677 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Here we are. It is the last show of August in the year 2020. I'm Andrew Horowitz. And I'm the host of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. I'm also the founder of Horowitz Company, and we're investment advisors, you know, helping you with your investments. That's what we do. We do that every single day, all the time. And, you know, I think it's important to mention because something happened this week I thought was really interesting. I got a call from someone, and they said that they had been scared to call us before because they were worried that, well, maybe they weren't big enough of a client for us. And maybe that, you know, I don't know, somehow that was scary for them. And I told them, you know, it's nonsense. I'm telling you that. There's nothing to be scared about. We have strategies for all size portfolios. In fact, over the years, because our listeners have asked us to come up with a lower initial investment for one of our strategies, we actually created Investology, which has a $10,000 minimum investment. So there's nothing to worry about. I just thought I'd mention that. And I think it's important to for you to know that, of course, basically we're here to answer any questions, help you, give you direction to make sure that your financial future is set sometime, whenever that is out there, whether it's 10 years from now, 20, 30 years from now. Some of you, maybe more than 40 years. So nothing to be scared about. It's all good. It's all good. Now, I'd like to mention something right at the top here. I'm going to talk about this whole imposter situation on Twitter in a little bit. But I want to mention we also finally, it took us years, it finally updated our Facebook page for The Disciplined Investor. And we're going to post, you know, videos and commentary, and you'll get alerted if you are following it. So to get this kicked off, do me a favor. If you're on Facebook, go over to The Disciplined Investor. Find it. You can just search for it. Make sure it's me. You'll see my picture on there. You'll see the site says it's us. And follow that site because we'll put up early some things that are going on and maybe a couple of surprises, some things that maybe aren't on other areas. So we want to kick that off right now on Facebook. So what are we going to talk about today? I mean, you know, markets have a mind of their own, but there is clearly, I don't know if you've seen it, it's there. It's there as plain as day. There's this gigantic elephant in the room. And it's one of those big ones. It's not one of those Asian elephants, right? You go into Asia, if you've ever been there, or some circuses, they'll show you the Asian elephants. They're a little bit smaller. I'm not talking about the real midgets, but they're smaller than their cousins, the ginormous African elephants. And they've been just absolutely stampeding right in our living rooms. It's there. It's no question. And everybody likes to dance around this discussion. We talk about it a lot, and sometimes people get a little bit bored with it. But I think it's really important to understand what's happening. Because right now, this moment in time, what's going on, I think it's a watershed moment. And yes, we've talked about this before. It's all about the Fed, right? It's about what's going on right now. And if you recall, back in 2019, back in August in particular, about a year ago, I had the opportunity to go to a luncheon where Ben Bernanke was speaking. And I thought it would be a kind of a cool thing to do, right? That, I mean, you know, I go to various, well, back in the days before masks and all that, when there were conferences, I'd go to all these conferences here and there, but I thought this one would be a really cool one. It was a luncheon, a couple of great speakers, but the keynote speaker and the focus speaker was Ben Bernanke. And he talked about something during that discussion. I asked him some questions afterwards, and he talked about this whole idea that the Fed is considering changing some of their inflation targeting and what they're willing to accept. It was a change in the way that, well, the Fed viewed inflation. So what we know right now is that they really seem to be pretty much against going negative to negative rates. I mean, we have a ZIRP, zero interest rate policy right now, right? But they've seen what happens in Japan and Europe, and it doesn't seem to help. So they've kind of stayed away from that, but they've in retrospect, that I think is a really smart move so far. But they have to do something to keep the markets excited. They need to do something to continually restate how dovish they are and continuously recommit to the markets, because when you see various indications that inflation is starting to come up on only the month-to-month, right? We saw almost a 6% annualized between PPP and CPI over the last month. And people get a little nervous, like, whoa, is the Fed going to do something? So the Fed feels with their communication strategy, which is just pretty much providing us with constant commitments and recommitting and making sure that they are talking exactly their book on a continual basis. So now what they've done is, just like Bernanke said, they're going to start looking at and putting into practice inflation averaging. So what does that mean? And why is that important? So the idea right now was that, okay, they have a dual mandate, and what's going to happen is that they're going to look at inflation and prices, and they're going to look at employment. Now, by the way, the reason why we spend time on this is because right now, at the focus of the markets at this moment, and over the last number of months, and really, well, over the last 10 years, but really now, the focus of the market is all about liquidity, stimulus, and the continuation of money flooding into markets to keep prices as high as they are. Because we're going to talk about valuations in a minute. So markets are really focused on this whole issue, and it's really important for us as investors to understand what's happening. And as long as the Fed is there, you know, they say don't fight the Fed, of course, but as long as the Fed is continuing to not only maintain a current very dovish stance with very low interest rates for a very long time, and they are standing behind the markets have at least a reasonable opportunity to continue at levels that, well, are a little bit absurd in terms of valuations, but at least they have the backstop and the safety net of the Fed. So inflation averaging, why is this a big change? I mean, doesn't seem like a big deal. Well, for many years, they've been working on this 2% notion that they're going to keep inflation as much as possible towards that 2% goal. And if it goes over that 2% goal, well, they may step in and start to think about cutting back on their stimulative efforts. So now they don't want to do that. The unemployment at 10.1%. The economy not healed. And the problems that we have right now with regard to all the things related to the economy potentially reopening and the fact that, well, it's going to be a really tough road to get back to where we were from a GDP standpoint, from an overall growth, and from an employment standpoint. So just using the tried and true, which never got there. We never really got to the 2% for a moment, and then it kind of, you know, left. Since the great financial crisis, by the way, which really never been able to get there. So we're talking about over a decade. All the work that the Fed has done has resulted in, obviously, higher asset prices. Well, that's good. And really good employment situation, which was combined with some excellent fiscal decision-making with regard to deregulation and with regard to lower taxes and all the things that went into creating the recovery from 2009 all the way through where we were with a pretty good economy, great economy, in the start of 2020. Now, what this does is it basically tells us that they said, well, you know, we believe that inflation too much is really problematic and deflation is also problematic. When we see deflation, what we're going to start to do is obviously do our best to bring more liquidity into the markets, more quantitative easing, lower interest rates. But if we get over a certain threshold where prices really start moving higher, well, we're going to put a stop to that. These were like kind of safety protocols, kind of like a governor on a car, right? Can't go above a certain speed limit. It was set to make sure that there was safety. It was set to make sure that nobody got hurt. And now that's been just ripped right out of the machine because the Fed is now saying that we're going to use a longer-term inflation rate and average it with current and future inflation rates. And, you know, if we go a little bit hot, well, we're okay. Now, what that is signaling us right now, if you really think about this, what it's signaling is there is going to be inflation coming. That elephant in the room is all about the fact that these safety protocols of what the Fed is doing is creating, that's coming off, and what they've done in the past is creating inflation. And they know it's here, and they don't want the markets to freak out by believing that the old standards and the dual mandate, one component of it is stable prices, which is consistent with a 2% inflation rate, is going to be the number. Therefore, it's kind of like, all right, well, how far back are you going? You're going to go back 5 years and say that we were sub 2% for that period of time. So therefore, let's kind of go through a very basic calculation. If we average a 1.5% annualized rate of inflation over a five-year period, we can actually go to a 2.5% inflation period for the next 5 years, and the Fed is going to say, hey, that's just fine. We can go for 3% for about 2+ years. It's just going to be fine. And if we have some times when we're a bit higher, well, you know, let's see what happens. So therefore, they've taken out the safety. There is no more restrictions on how far they can press that pedal because the speed limit no longer is applicable right now. And they made it very clear. And markets are like, whoa, wait, whoa, that's good. The Fed's here, well, forever, right? Not for 4 minutes, not for 4 months, not for 4 years. They're forever. And that in itself is an important issue. So what they're doing this for is obviously to keep asset prices higher. And of course, they are desirous of getting the economy back up, which has nothing really to do with asset prices. I mean, have you looked at lumber prices lately? Lumber prices are up, I don't know, they're doubled recently. That's not good for the builders. Maybe they hedge some of that out, of course. But that's not good when we see those kind of prices moving like that. And we saw, obviously, over the last several months that our oil prices have moved up. I mean, let's not even talk about insurance and everything else in between, food prices going up. But the fact remains the Fed is signaling that they are there. Their inflation targets are no longer a concern of theirs. And in fact, they even talked about unemployment and the unemployment levels and where the employment is and that they're going to try to refocus somehow, magically, on lower paid employees and getting them back to work. I have no idea how anything the Fed could possibly do can target, well, they can't even do anything with unemployment or employment, frankly. That's really a fiscal issue. Lower taxes helps that. A good economy helps that. So low rates, in a way, can kind of help that out. But really directly and immediately, the only thing that can really help that is just companies rehiring again and an economy going back and, frankly, a reopening back to where we were. I mean, look, Japan, Europe, all the work that they've done over the years to try to bring inflation up hasn't worked. They even went so far as obviously excessive amounts of quantitative easing and negative interest rates, and they still cannot get inflation to kick up. And there's a lot of reasons for that. It's not just an economic reason on the surface of what you would think it is about growth of an economy. It also has a lot to do with what's happening in the economy. The gig economy, how that's changed the pricing game. How technology has changed the pricing game. These things are really important, and nothing that the Fed can do to help with that. And no, I'm not suggesting by any means that you fight the Fed. But I do think this is an admission by the Fed that they don't have control of their mandates. And pretty much now they're making it up as they go. So I want you to think about that and what they're doing and the fact that they're once again pretty much just blowing bubbles right now. And this is a moment in time that we're going to look back on to see what kind of damage this has done to the economy, because the inability for them to bring up naturally inflation to the way they want it to be, and by pushing it as hard as they're going to try moving forward, is going to create a bubble somewhere or another. You know, the squeezing on one end, it's going to kind of bulge somewhere else. Right now, where is that? Well, we know. Right now is the stock market. So just something really to consider, because the other elephant that we have to look at with respect to what's happening and how this bubble could be forming is the valuation. The valuation of stocks. I mean, it's a direct cousin of the Fed's actions. More liquidity, lower rates, make stocks look cheaper. Then people are taking money that they have, whether it's hedge funds or institutions, and they're leveraging up. And obviously, as the stock market seemingly never has a significant day down. In fact, a lot of stocks don't even have a significant day down lately. Well, everybody's buying into the fact that, well, the market's never going to go down. But ratios, I mean, a couple of them that we've talked about before are really starting to get, again, extremely frothy. And let's take a look at the S&P, for example, as a really good example of this. So right now, as we sit here, according to Yardini Research, the S&P 500 is trading at 23 times forward earnings. This is the highest since 2000. The PEG ratio, price and earnings to growth, the preferred ratio that I like to look at, is once again back over 22. I laugh because the last time you saw this was, you know, 1999, 2000-ish time period. That is an extremely high level and showing you just how much people are willing to pay for stocks over and above the growth rate over a 10-year, let's say, period. Kind of like this. You go into a neighborhood and you look at the houses and you see that on average, according to, you know, everything that's been going on in maybe recent times, that houses should be $250,000 a piece in this neighborhood, give or take, depending on, you know, the property size and what they did to the house and upgrades and, you know, windows, things of that nature. Okay. And one house on the block all of a sudden sells for $450,000. Why? I don't know. Somebody liked that house. There was somebody that liked that house. Five other people looked at it, didn't want to buy it, thought it was too expensive. Now all of a sudden, property values around go up. Now those $250,000 homes, maybe they start pricing at $325,000, $350,000 because they figured this guy down the block, similar kind of house, I don't know, bought a house here for a lot more than houses are worth. I'm thinking about selling. And when they sell, they price it higher. And all of a sudden, I don't know, it just starts to become the norm that we're going to pay this price for this house in this neighborhood, and all of a sudden you're paying a lot more than you would have in a recent period before. And with that, you have a valuation problem. Now again, what's something worth? What's something worth? It's worth whatever somebody's going to pay for it. Right now, due to the fact that we have a much higher level of exuberance in the market, we'll say that, maybe froth, there is the desire to buy stocks pretty much at any price. In fact, I was just looking this week. There were several stocks that missed earnings and guided down. We saw that they had a few days in the doghouse. They were kind of put out and said, oh, you did bad. You didn't beat. You didn't come in to where you should have come in, and you're guiding lower. 3 or 4 days later, pop right back. Company, for example, that did okay, but their growth wasn't where it was at, and there was some issues with the earnings, and it really wasn't at a level that seemed reasonable. And in fact, for where the stock was, well ahead of its skis in terms of price, when the earnings came out, it dropped down significantly. It was down like 25%. This is Fastly. 2 or 3 days later, 4 days later, stock is up from the lows about 25%. And why is this? Why is this that, well, stocks that don't really make where they're supposed to, you know, should be in terms of analyst estimates are not doing too poorly, but a company that beats pretty well, stock goes up. Look at Salesforce last week. I mean, a 25% move on a $175 or so billion dollar market cap company. And the next day, by the way, they announced a massive layoff coming in after record revenues and great earnings, which doesn't really sit well with a lot of people. And there's a lot of questions about what's that all about? I mean, why are you doing layoffs when in fact you had some great revenues? Unless you see something coming down the pike that's really concerning. Maybe. But we see the stocks that are missing or not doing well or not keeping up, you know, with the earnings momentum that they had are not really getting hit too badly. And again, this is because easy money is creating this incredible buying frenzy. Well, it's not for every stock. I mean, you got to not across the board. But one of the things we also saw over the last couple of weeks is this weird and very uncharacteristic breadth of the markets, the advanced decliners in a stock market that is rallying. Oftentimes you see kind of a broad-based move, especially on a day like last Wednesday. Kind of everything seemed to be moving up. The indices were moving up. But meanwhile, on Wednesday, at the close, decliners outpaced advancers. So in other words, those stocks that were moving up versus those stocks moving down were outnumbered. So the stocks that were moving down were outnumbered significantly in a major rally day. This happened a couple of times throughout the week. And this is not normally what you want to see. You don't want to see a handful of stocks bringing the entire market up when you have valuations at an all-time high with a stock market that doesn't seemingly want to go down. Something's a little bit off there. Now, I know. You're thinking, Andrew, why so serious, right? I mean, you know, am I seeming kind of negative? Somebody wrote me and said, oh, why are you so negative? I'm not negative. I'm not negative necessarily because we're not finding it right now. We're sticking to the process, and that's having us sit pretty well. But I'm just trying to be realistic here. And that's what we do on the show, right? We talk about a discipline. And if you have a process and a discipline, you don't get caught up in frenzies. I've been around a long enough time, and I've seen several different stock market frenzies. They all end the same way. I've studied the history of it. They all end the same way. I'm not suggesting there's going to be a massive crash here, but come on, let's be realistic that this is an unsustainable direction. Now, it may last a couple of years, a couple of months, a couple of weeks, but use a process to make sure that you are setting yourself up for the right long-term investment and not getting caught up in a frenzy where you could do a lot of harm to yourself. I mean, I think it's important to note something. So if you remember this, we've talked about this. One of the things that we do is we use a quantitative screening process to develop a core strategy and components within our TDI managed growth strategy, right? This is that long short strategy that we have. So we use this strategy and this screen, and what we have is a multitude of different fundamental and some technical factors that go into creating this screen in order to give us the stocks that we're going to hold for a certain period based on various ratios and fundamentals. Okay. What we do is we create a natural expansion and contraction of the portfolio based on the number of names that come through. So if we start out with 5,000 names out there and 75 come through, well, we have a certain exposure, a much larger exposure of equities to the portfolio for that part of the portfolio. If, in fact, a fewer number come through because maybe companies aren't able to grow their earnings or margins or, you know, keep up with volumes on the market or potentially, are having some other difficulties within their ROE or maybe even balance sheet issues, what happens is we get a smaller amount, and that tells us something. Because it's not just one or two names that fell off. If we go from 40 names, let's say, or 50 names down to 20 in a quarter, something's up, and vice versa. We may go from 20 names, 25 names, up to. Now, usually that doesn't happen. Usually what we see is that there is a similar amount from quarter to quarter. And then what happens is that usually there's a change. We start expanding depending on economic backdrop and maybe even some tax code changes because of earnings growth with that and the better profitability of a company. And vice versa. It goes back and forth, right? Slowly but surely. Well, let me tell you what's going on right now. And I think it's really interesting because last quarter we expanded a bit of our exposure up to about 60% equity exposure. Now, in September, we're doing a rebalance. And in September, only 26 stocks made it through the screen. Now, this is down significantly. We're going to be at a 35% equity allocation starting in September for the core equity exposure from 60%. We're whacking a gross amount of 25%, and basically cutting this down a little bit, almost in half in our equity exposure. So what does that tell us? That's the question. And that why is it important to look at that and then also look at other indications like valuations in respect to how we're investing? Well, this tells me that stocks are not as profitable and not able to earn money as they have been in the past. If we have a lot of stocks coming through, well, it's pretty good all around. When we have a much reduced overall positioning, that tells me, well, things aren't that good on a global basis. And maybe that's why breadth has been so bad. Maybe that's why not every stock is really participating with these averages and these indices like it seems from the outside. And what it tells us is that the environment, from a fundamental standpoint, let's not look at price for a moment, just a fundamental standpoint, is not that great. And that's important to understand, especially as we look into a time and we look right in the eyes of a 23-time forward earnings multiple and a 22 PEG ratio, and everybody blathering that stocks have a lot higher to go. We see companies like a Tesla that since post-split are up, 50% in the matter of weeks, earning far less than Walmart and being worth a lot more. A consistent company versus the potential for a company that got a lot of its money and the last earnings from selling off tax credits, whereas that may not be the case moving forward as many other companies are getting into the electronic car game. They may not need those credits, the Ford, the GMs, et cetera, Volkswagens, whoever. So just consider that and put that in the back of your thinking cap, that we have a significant amount of technical indicators like the KRI, the key reversal indicator, at a +4, holding pretty steady at about a +3, +4, +5 over the last several weeks. And valuations that are a little bit, I would say, silly at this point. Again, don't fight it necessarily because, you know, the old adage, right? Markets can stay irrational much longer than you could stay solvent. You know that one. Well, yeah, use a process. And it's a funny thing. Do you remember when, it kind of also tells us, I think, where we are. Remember when there was a incredible pop on stocks when it was mentioned that company ABC or XYZ was doing something or another for blockchain? Remember that? It could be like, oh, we're looking into blockchain, up 20%, right? Or we're going to enable blockchain for use with our catalog. Oh, up 40%. Do you remember back in, was it 2000, 1999, 2000, when anything that had the word internet related to it ramped higher for days and weeks? How about the marijuana craze? All these marijuana stock companies started coming out and IPOing with, like, you know, no prospect, and they were just up 200, 300, 400, 500%. And more recently, what do we have? We had the COVID vaccines or even the testing. Any company that was, you know, mentioned they were doing some kind of testing or some kind of, doing something for a vaccine, whoop, straight up. And I guess we also have the whole stock split thing that all of a sudden we saw Apple and Tesla go right through the roof because they announced that they're going to be doing a stock split where there's no fundamental change to the company at all. And I understand a 1 or 2 day move on that, not a multi-week move that's up 40, 50% on the notion that's going to be a stock split. Well, now we have something too, don't we? We have the new thing. We have TikTok. If you mention that a company is looking to buy TikTok as part of some kind of deal so that TikTok won't be banned by the U.S., right? Whoop, straight up. So first we had what? And I think this is the first one, Microsoft, wasn't it? I think there was something with Twitter. Stocks move up. Then we saw Oracle. I don't understand that one. We saw Oracle. I'm probably missing one or two here. Who else do we have? There was one other. Now the latest, they were going to buy themselves, right? The investors within TikTok were getting together trying to buy themselves. And the latest one we have is now Microsoft is teaming up with Walmart. Walmart up 5% on that news. Who's next? I mean, I don't know. Who's a better fit? Is it YouTube? Google? Maybe. It seems like this is part of that announcement when you're doing blockchain or marijuana or internet of 2000s. Latest thing is either to say you're going to do a split or you're buying TikTok. Maybe you should do a split and buy TikTok. Wow, that would be something. Your stock would double overnight. It's a really silly story. I mean, but this is what happens when we see excess liquidity in the markets and a market fever that is just feeding on that. And the chat rooms that are throwing out stock ideas and people are sitting on their couches because they're not working, trading on Robinhood and other different platforms that are out there, making it really easy and game-like just to trade. So I think that encapsulates the elephant in the room. What's going on with ratios and fundamentals and understanding of how a process can work to get you into the right positioning and a little bit more background and backup on the stock frenzy that's going out on right now. So I think we need to talk about at this moment. I need you to listen to this. If you've been listening to this in the background, if you fell asleep, wake up. I need to talk to you about something. And I need to talk to you about the imposter. If you've been following me on Twitter, you probably know what's going on by now and you know that there's an imposter. Yes, somebody decided that, wow, wouldn't it be cool to create an account that is a duplicate of Horowitz's account? Retweet and make it look like they're posting the podcast and different commentary. And I guess they're spending all this time with an auto bot, or maybe they have some kind of system that automatically reposts whatever I put on mine. They had like 8,500 followers. They were following like 8,500 people. That's how you could tell, by the way. If they're following kind of everybody that follows them, you know something's up there. But what happened was somebody let me onto this. And they were using a similar name to mine. So mine is Andrew Horowitz, right? My Twitter handle is my first and last name. Andrew Horowitz ends in a Z. They were using Andrew Horowitz that ends in an A. Instead of the Z, it's an A. This is a fake imposter account. So when I started tweeting out to my followers and I said, hey, listen, do me a favor, report this. We got to tell people this is fake, etc. Well, this jerk got wind of it and started to direct message those people who thought they were following me. Saying, hey, what's happening? A lot of people say, oh, hey, I can't believe you're following me. I'm so excited about it. And then started pitching them some Bitcoin deal. And a few people got sucked into saying, oh, tell me more. Until they kind of realized this is not right, because this guy was asking, or this gal, whoever it was saying, you know what, let's chat on WhatsApp. Give me this information. I can turn, you know, $2,000 of your investment into Bitcoin and probably make you $15,000 or so in a week. I got a couple of screenshots of the conversations from the direct messages on Twitter. This is not me. It is not me. If you know me well enough, I'm not going to try to pitch you on Bitcoin. I may reach out to you and say, hey, how you doing on investing? And you know, we've got a couple different strategies that may be of interest to you. I may DM you for that one day. Who knows? But I'm not going to DM you and talk to you and then move you over to WhatsApp to try to pitch you something on Bitcoin. That's just not happening. I've also heard this has been happening to a lot of people. So first of all, fortunately, you need to stop what you're doing right now and make sure that you're following me, because you may have been following the imposter and you're not getting all the information that's coming from my Twitter account, because they just randomly posted some things. And we were successful in blocking and reporting them and having them removed from Twitter, which happened a lot faster than I thought it was going to happen. So if you are following me and all of a sudden you're not following me, check to make sure. Refollow, you know, follow me now, obviously, if you want to get that, because that account has been terminated. And recognize if anybody contacted you about some kind of Bitcoin investment, it was not me, and make sure that you discontinue any conversations with that party. So the good news, like I said, it looks like Twitter took the accounts down. After everybody, thank you, by the way, for all the people that reported. There was a ton of people who told me, I mean, hundreds and hundreds of people that told me they reported it to Twitter. So we got them off within, I think, about 3 or 4 days, which I understand is probably a record. So we were pretty adamant about getting this done, because just be careful. And this goes for other accounts too. Make sure that you're following the right person. If there's only retweets in the tweet stream, then that may not be the right person that you're following. Check the name. And by the way, people say, well, Andrew, why don't you get one of those little verified check marks? Yeah, lots of luck. Twitter, if you go to their verified page, they're not even doing it anymore. Probably from a legal standpoint. We tried a couple of years ago, and it just kind of went around in circles and circles and circles, and verified was gone. They're just not doing it. It says right on there, we're no longer verifying, or at least it's on hold, and it's been like that for a year and a half. So right now, make sure you're following the right people. Do a little cleanup on your Twitter account and make sure you're following all the people that you think that you're following, because that's important. And of course, just out of common sense, don't do any pitching and buying any pitches if somebody's selling you something that wants you to switch over to WhatsApp and then maybe gives you some kind of a account to send some money through Bitcoin. Not the best idea. Not the best idea. So let's take some questions from listeners. Hopefully you've been joining us on Mondays. We have that pop-up Q&A webinar. If you haven't been doing that, you're missing a really rich session of information. We spend about an hour together at 4:30 on Mondays and go over some of the topics that are, important for the week. Really pretty wide range. And then answer your questions live. Any questions, whatever you have, make sure to get it out there. We started this back when the pandemic started as a way for people to get some access to information. I said, we're going to keep this going as long as it works, as long as everybody is interested, et cetera. I got to tell you, it's like wall-to-wall people in this webinar. So if you want to register, you have to register to get the reminders of when it's happening, et cetera. Go over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com. On the right-hand side, there's a little area where you can click the to register for the just you have to put in your name and your email so you can get the information. All right, We got some questions that came in, some from the question line, the new question line we have. I picked a few of them that I thought were interesting. I also have a question that from somebody that from Canada. So I'm going to start with that. And this is from Bill T. And he says, can you discuss investing from a Canadian perspective? First of all, probably not. And by the way, did you know that investment advisors in the United States are prohibited from working directly as an investment advisor with Canadian residents? We can work from other people around the world, but Canada, I mean, most other countries we can't, but Canada is on the no-fly list. It's been there for years. Anyway, he writes, I buy many U.S. stocks and find your talks helpful. They help me step through my thought process. His question is, if I have a stock that is paying a large dividend in respect to the price I paid many years back, but the stock itself is stagnant and paying 2% today, is it a smart hold? So it doesn't matter if you're Canadian, by the way, here. It doesn't matter where you're from. It's the same question. The question is, I bought a stock many years ago, and I bought it, let's say, at an 8% yield. Stock's not doing much there, but I'm still getting on my original amount 8%. But if I bought it today, the current yield is 2%. Should I hold it? The reason why this is happening is because the price appreciation has happened. And probably, unless they cut down their dividend, you're still getting the value on your money from what you invested. Now, yes, it's much lower today on the value. So if your value, let's say, went from $10,000 in that stock and you were getting dividends at 8%, which is $800 per year, and now it's worth $20,000, it's not the right calculation, but $20,000, and it's really only yielding 2%. Again, not the right calculation. The fact is it's 2% on your $20,000 today. However, it's commensurate with what you'd be getting in the environment anywhere else. So you got some kind of stock appreciation there from a growth standpoint, capital gains, and you've been getting the 8% on your original investment. Look at your original investment as the key. And then secondarily, look at the price and the value. And then third, look at what is the current yield on it. And is the current yield commensurate with what you would get today in the market if you had a like investment? It seems to me that probably, I would say without knowing what stock it is and all, I mean, if in fact you bought it a lot lower, you're getting paid on your original value all these years at a much higher interest rate, and just the current rate on the value today is lower, I see nothing wrong with this. So there you go. You can always write me. You can go over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com, click on the Ask Andrew button, and there's also a way to get questions in. We'll put that up on Twitter every once in a while, on the real account, of course, and you can dial in and leave your questions. And let's get to some of them right now. And our first question comes in from the Netherlands.
Hi, Andrew. This is John Venner from the Netherlands. Long-term listener across the Pacific here. Loving the show. You keep saying that the fiscal stimulus finds its way to risk assets, which I fully understand when those stimulus is aimed at Wall Street, like with non-QE, the PPP, and low interest rates. However, I keep thinking that if those stimulus arrives in the pockets of the little guy using unemployment benefits or helicopter money, it will take a lot longer before that money trickles up in the stock market, and that therefore the boost to risk assets will be not as strong. What's your take on that? Cheers.
I think I have a couple of different thoughts on that. I think there's a lot of people that were getting a lot more money from the fiscal stimulus than they made prior to when they were working, and therefore they're looking to boost their net worth and possibly extend out some of their earnings, because they're afraid that they're not going to get a job back. And while a lot of times you would see that people would retrace and retract, what's happening right now is the idea that the stock market always goes up, which is being drilled in by a lot of people. People are putting their money to play there. So I agree with you that if people are not working, money's not going into their 401k program. And I agree with you with the fact that there is the potential for that money to take a lot longer to get into the system. It's still there. And the money that was spent by the government for the CARES Act was so extraordinary that, again, it just finds its way into the stock market, into risk assets, and into homes, and into other things that are being used by people. And that's why we had the incredible recovery that we saw with retail, for example. So I would tend to agree with you, but I think that it's just a matter of the process. It all gets leaked in there somehow, one way or the other. And, of course, the low interest rates and excess liquidity seem to help as well, because now people have lower expenses based on that. Next up, we have a question from Jack. Jack.
Hey, Andrew. This is Jack. Got a couple of questions. The first one is, in light of Kodak incident, and then it turns out a lot of people purchased the call options like a couple of days before. Is that like a website or a software that we can see the size of the options? Such information, because usually the volume or the open interest only shows on daily basis. And the second question I have is,
All right, we'll get to that. But let's take the first one. I mean, yes, you're right. When you look at open interest and you look at volume, I mean, if you track the volume overall and you look at where the volume has been with regard to the positioning, and of course, you could probably find that on, there's a variety of option sites out there. So the Chicago Board of Options Exchange, CBOE, should have some of that information. I would think that you could probably look at that through like I think TD Ameritrade is really good with options on their some of their platforms, thinkorswim. You may be able to find that, but I think that the problem is in this circumstance with Kodak, which you talk about the Kodak situation. Obviously, there was a lot of insiders that knew what was going on there, and it may have been a little bit difficult to really pick that out, because while they did buy those call options, I'm not exactly sure how they did that, where they did that, but it would have been a tell to a degree, of course. And trying to ferret that stuff out is a pretty difficult task. It doesn't happen that often. They have insiders that are breaking the rules and doing insider trading on non-public disclosed information. Sometimes it is there. Then again, there's going to be other times that you're going to see and get faked out with things because, you know, obviously they're looking at some options trades and you don't know if it's an options trade straight up or some kind of spread or ratio. So just something to think about. Hey, Ryan.
Hey, it's Ryan. I'm from Phoenix. And I was wondering, what do you think about all this stimulus? Don't you think it's going to make inflation go up? If so, what do you think we should be buying? It seems stocks are already pricing in massive inflation, so it seems like that trade is out the window. So what would you say? Do you think gold maybe? Thanks.
Hey, Ryan. Yeah, well, that's what we talked about in the show today, actually. That was part of it, right? But there's a great question about what do you do about it? So if we believe that there is inflation that's coming, we believe that that elephant in the room of the Fed taking off all the safety protocols, kind of full speed ahead, screeching the tires, what do we do? Well, if prices go up, yes, hard assets are a good place to be. Things like interest bearing investments, like utilities and things like that, not the best. Growth oriented, okay, that could do well as well. And stocks, yeah, they'll keep on following as long as it doesn't get out of control. The big reason that stocks oftentimes will get hit as inflation starts to turn up and spin up is because there's a belief that the Fed is going to slow down on their overall stimulus program or bring it back, right? They're going to somehow raise rates. But if we have a situation where the Fed is not inclined to raise rates because now they're using the interest rate, the inflation averaging, that's why they're doing it. That's exactly what's happening. That's why gold has been moving up and silver and various metals and commodities and foods. You may want to look at a basket, an ETF that has commodities in there and that have some that are slanted more towards, let's say, oil, some agriculture, some metals, or a basket of them entirely. But yeah, I mean, I think it's a good idea. We have commodities in our portfolios for our clients. We've held them for a while because we know that one day they're going to be a really good diversifier and they're going to come in handy. We never can tell exactly when it's going to be that they're going to pop. But I got to tell you, the move on oil recently and the move on precious metals, and ags has been pretty good and helped out to boost performance for portfolios that are holding that. I told you in weeks past in our Investology and our global allocations, we have a commodity exposure. And I mentioned that we have three metals-related companies, miners, in our managed growth strategy. So I think that you have to look at those inflation alternatives. And you should also probably look back to our discussion with Keith McCullough from HedgeEye, where he was talking about quads and what quad would be the one that you would want to look at in terms of what environment is the backdrop that is really driving things. Right now, you know, if we think that we are starting to get into an inflationary environment, there are certain areas that you want to kind of be into and certain areas you don't. And maybe some of them are a little bit different today because the environment that we live in with COVID and the problems with states and municipalities, and maybe you want to be in tax freeze to a degree, but maybe not at this point. You know, real estate could do very well in that kind of environment. Hard assets could do well. But some interest-bearing, like real estate that is a leveraged loan portfolio of real estate, may not do as well because, obviously, as interest rates go up, if they go up, and if there's inflation, there could be a problem. But again, the Fed is saying interest rates are not going up. So there's kind of a different feel for what's going on. That's why everything seems to be really focused and laser focused on the stock market right now. So I think that kind of beats that to death. We're going to end right there. Thank you so much for listening this week. Thank you so much for listening every week. Thank you for following me on The Disciplined Investor on Facebook, and of course, the right Andrew Horowitz. I'll tell you again, the handle is Andrew Horowitz. No spaces, no underscores. Andrew Horowitz, one word with a Z on the end. That's my Twitter handle. You should follow that. We talk about some great stuff on there. That's my go-to place. So make sure you're following the right one. If you're not following me, start following me. You really will do yourself a service, I think, and I'd appreciate it. Until next week. We do have Paul Barron on next week from Foodable Network. We're going to be talking about food, restaurants, leisure, what's happening in the industry, what he's seeing of the new wave and direction for, well, for us eating and dining out and for going to hotels and what's happening inside the industry from industry players that he is intimately involved with on a business relationship and really going to shed a lot of stuff. So that's really cool. I was on his show this week. We talked about the massacre in commercial real estate in certain areas. That is on YouTube. You can find that. There was a full interview with me this week as well. Until next week, I wish you the very best, and I'll see you in September. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye. Nothing discussed in this podcast should be considered a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Past performance is no indication of future results. In addition, the information presented is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should be construed as advice designed to meet the individual needs of any particular investor. Nothing herein constitutes legal, accounting, or tax advice, or individually tailored investment advice. Remember, investing involves substantial risk. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results, and a loss of original capital may occur. No one receiving or accessing this information should make any investment decision without first consulting his or her own personal financial advisor and conducting his or her own research and due diligence, including carefully reviewing any applicable prospectuses, press releases, reports, and other public filings of the issuer of any securities being considered. Please consider this for educational purposes only. As always, use your best judgment when investing. Horowitz & Company, Inc. is registered as an investment advisor with the state of Florida and conducts business in other states where it is properly registered or is excluded from registration requirements. Registration does not imply any level of skill or training.